Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Adrian McNair, freelance writer, joins me from the suburbs of Vancouver. How you doing, Adrian?
Pretty good, and you?
I'm good. Welcome to Shortcuts. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by David Crow, Kristen Tresur, Ryan Steele, Jorge Barrera, Catherine, Eileen Mountain, Carol Linnett, Matt Fimblewinter, and JF Prier. JF, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because of the lack of diversity in the Canadian media landscape. We need many different voices, so I'm happy to support Canada Land.
This episode is also brought to you by Sure Design T-shirts. I don't know, Adrian, where you get your tribal designs on your ethically produced cotton T-shirts, but you should have a look at Sure Design T-shirts. They are a company based in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and they make these unique crinkly cotton T-shirts that are very soft and stretchy. One satisfied customer describes Sure Design T-shirts as unreasonably soft and comfortable. And the company also makes yoga wear and bags and fair trade handmade jewelry. They do custom printing in the U.S. If you have your own store or a yoga studio here in Canada, you can order wholesale from Sure Design and get product shipped internationally at wholesale rates. If you are interested and locally sourced Thai products. There is no better source than Sure Design. And they do have, I keep mentioning, really cool vintage beer logos. And they're not brands that we're familiar with. These are international beer brands. You should have a look at these, Adrian, and you can do so. Check it out at SureDesignT-shirts.com.
Okay, thanks for the tip.
No problem. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does BetterHelp. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. That's BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. We have like a heavy show today, two kind of very serious topics. So before we even get there, I just wanted to check, like sometimes something pops up in the press and it's not really worth a lengthy conversation, but I do just want to recognize this trend. And the trend, Adrian, is that it's springtime. And the press seems super horny to me in a way that is like a little bit like an uncomfortable horny uncle. Like, I don't know if any of this reached BC. I also shouldn't be talking about this too much because it's very Ontario-centric. But there's this like one of these stories where a young woman at a high school here in Ontario started a campaign to wear halter tops.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
If a teenager in Ontario wears a halter top, do you hear about that in BC?
Oh, yeah, big time. You know, I even had a bit of a Twitter war with somebody, you know, who was saying this was repressing women and repressing girls, and I kind of had it out with her. But, you know, I have an interesting story about that if you're interested to hear my take on it.
Absolutely.
So I have been a community reporter, so community news, not national news, but a community news reporter here in BC for the last 4 years. And you do a lot of stories that involve kids with community news. So you go to the high school and you interview the high school football team or what have you. So I was doing a story here locally a couple years ago, and I went to interview a bunch of kids who were doing a charity event. It was really nice, but it involved running. So I thought, I'm going to take a great photo of these kids lacing up their shoes, right? So, you know, I get down on the ground and I'm ready to get that really close shot. So it's going to look really cool and wide angle. But the problem is that this girl's wearing extremely, extremely short shorts, and I got a peep show of like a 16-year-old girl. And you know, a lot of people might laugh and say, you know, but that's disturbing to me as a parent. And getting a close-up peep show of a 16-year-old girl was not something that I wanted to see. So my take is, yes, it can go too far if in school when these kids are wearing these short little clothes, they maybe should put a little bit more clothing on.
But finish your story. Did that photo run?
You know, I ran it by a bunch of people and I ended up getting a photo where you could see that the shorts were really short and her legs were completely exposed. So really, you know, long legs and lots of skin. But ultimately the photo that I chose wasn't too offensive or anything, but it was borderline. It was like, I was a little uncomfortable.
Right. Because I don't even want to engage with this, like, I don't know, controversy, debate. That's not really what the show is about, whether or not she should be allowed to wear the halter top. What caught my attention, man, is just that it was an excuse for every newspaper to run photographs of this young woman and other young women in tube tops. I mean, that was what it was about. Most people agree that teenagers should not be allowed to wear this, which is kind of ironic because we were all obviously taking some pleasure in running these pictures of these young women in very revealing outfits. And then there's a story in the Toronto Star just today. Somebody threw up on Facebook an event listing for an orgy at Trinity Bellwoods Park, a very popular park amongst the hipster contingent of the city of Toronto. And like 1,000 people RSVP'd, they're coming to the orgy at Trinity Bellwoods. I think maybe someone is joking And I think maybe 1,000 people are kind of in on that joke. And the Toronto Star ran a piece, is this for real? Is there really going to be an orgy? And they got comments from the cops. And I just think it's like the interest that journalists are taking in sexuality this spring tells us so much more about the newspapers and who they think is reading them than it does about, I think, the subjects of these stories. And it's just, it's like that ogling uncle at the party, you know, it's just got to chill out a little bit.
I think that's a good observation, but it's also, I think it also tells you a bit about, you know, who's kind of writing these stories now. You've got sort of digital journalism, as they call it, but what it really is, it's a 22-year-old intern straight out of J school who's been asked to throw some stuff up during an internship, and they go for the easy pickings because, you know, doing real journalism is hard.
Well, I don't know if we can blame the intern. Somebody had to sign off on these stories, you know.
Fair enough. You know, I've been asked to do stuff like that before, so no, I don't want to blame all the kids.
All right, let's get on. Let's move on to the serious business.
Well, some stunning new revelations on video made by the man who killed Corporal Nathan Cirillo on Parliament Hill. Jacques Bourbeau, Global's Ottawa bureau chief, joins us now with more. Jacques.
Well, Alan, when Michael Z. Half-Bibo launched that attack on Parliament Hill just beforehand, he recorded a video, and part of that video was released about 3 months ago by the RCMP. It was 55 seconds in length. Z. Half-Bibo saying that his attack was in retaliation for Canadian soldiers fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. But critically, the RCMP withheld 18 seconds of video. And today, the Canadian press is reporting that those 18 seconds include Z. Half-Bibo encouraging others to launch attacks in Canada and also mentioning several Middle Eastern names.
Wrong. They're wrong. That was a Canadian press story. What was in the 18 seconds that the RCMP withheld? What was in it? And we were told that it was something that they had to withhold. The RCMP told us, Commissioner Bob Polson described this as they had sound operational reasons for withholding this Arabic stuff from the beginning and the end of that video. He said that he can't tell us what it is. For the very same reasons that we've edited the video, I cannot explain to you at this point why we have done so. And the press was speculating, well, obviously, you know, they don't want to have, what if he's encouraging other people to commit similar terrorist acts? What if there's some coded message to his fellow Mujahideen? And it all supported a idea that he was not a lone wolf, that he was not one crazy, you know, crackhead doing this, but that there was some kind of organized campaign. And then we get this news story a week ago that ran in the Globe and Mail, the Canadian press story. It went far and wide, and it stated, Adrian, as just like a fact, that Ottawa shooter urged others to attack.
Right.
In the missing video segment, right?
Yeah, I don't know why it is that journalists have tended to kind of cover for the police in recent years. But yeah, you see that problem cropping up even in local police stories, and it's quite frustrating as a journalist to have to deal with that.
It's just crazy because we know that was just completely false. So what's in the actual 18 seconds that finally got released here? I'll play a little bit of it here.
بالله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين استعينه ونستغفره رب اشرح صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي.
The RCMP actually did the translation and the subtitles. I'll just read it in full here quickly. In the name of Allah, the most gracious and the most merciful, all praise to Allah, the Lord of the universe. We seek his help and ask for his forgiveness. Lord, open for me my chest, ease my task for me, and remove the impediment from my speech. In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. And then the final 5 seconds. Lord, accept for me, and peace be upon you and upon the Mujahideen. May Allah curse you. That's the most threatening he gets. May Allah curse you. And he says it very quietly, but the RCMP subtitle adds 2 exclamation marks to that final statement. So however you want to interpret this, there's just nothing in there that is consistent with this media portrayal of why the RCMP had to hold it. The thing that shocks me is those stories have yet to be corrected or withdrawn. I mean, if you go to the Globe and Mail right now, I've asked Jordan Press, the Canadian press reporter who ran this. I sent him an email asking him to talk with me about his story. Ottawa shooter urged others to attack in missing video segment. It's not true.
Right. No, that is disturbing. You know, when the media kind of gets a narrative, you know, and I don't want to pin this on every media outlet, but you're right. You know, once they kind of get a narrative and they believe something to be true, and they it's disturbing when they do not go back and correct the record, especially when, as you say, you know, it's been proven that there wasn't a conspiracy, or he wasn't encouraging others to do this. He wasn't being mentored by somebody from the Middle East. You know, this was sort of a lone wolf attack.
Yeah, I'm very curious about how this story came to be, you know, because apparently Jordan Press writes that he had a couple of sources who confirmed to him last week that two sources who spoke to CP about the video, speaking on condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to discuss the contents of the portion that have yet to be made public. So obviously, there are certain institutions and organizations that the narrative of this as a organized terrorist attack benefits and is consistent with, you know, a lot of what law enforcement and government has been trying to tell us about this, or inferring from this that it's not an isolated incident and trying to kind of create policy around it, everything around that. There are people who want that to be true. So I want to know the story behind that erroneous story. Everybody makes mistakes and everybody can get spun by sources. But like you say, there's got to be a reckoning for that. They've got to actually own up to the fact that they got it wrong. And I kind of want to know how they got it wrong, because it sounds to me like that's where there's a real story.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I think one of the biggest problems with stories like this is that there isn't that reckoning, or that you know, going back and being introspective in terms of what went wrong with all of the outlets sort of following this story, and not sort of not apologizing, but at least saying, you know, the story's changed at this point. I don't know what it is, but it is a phenomenon that does seem to happen. You know, it's happened in other sort of instances, such as I can think of when the media all went after the detainee story in Afghanistan. You know, and then when they found out later that, you know, it wasn't quite as they had reported it, you know, as far as people in Canada still think, Canada was completely complicit in torturing Afghans during the Afghan war. So, I think it's a pretty big problem on that end.
Well, I think that takes us into the next item, which I'll do in a moment. I just want to say I have asked the author of that piece, Jordan Press, as I say, for comment, but I only asked him today, and I really do want to get his side of it. So if he gets back to me about just what happened there later on, I'll follow up either in the notes to the show or write an article or have him on the show, something like that. But I definitely want to know how he got that wrong, how that came to be, and follow up on this and continue the story.
Do you have anything to say to Mr. Harper, Prime Minister Harper?
Well, I'm going to have to disappoint him. I'm better than the person he thinks I am.
Yeah. Like, I like goodness. I like peace. I like happiness. I like joy. It's all abstract ideas.
My problem right now is I'm trying to do everything all at the same time. I'm just hungry to experience everything all at once. I wish that I could just get out of prison and just be the next Joe on the street who nobody knows and nobody gives a second look or a thought to. I just wish for people to just give me a chance.
Why did the CBC not reveal to Canadians that their propaganda film to whitewash Al-Qaeda terrorist Omar Khadr was made in collaboration with Al Jazeera? It's not a genuine documentary. It doesn't ask any real questions about Omar Khadr's jihadist views. It doesn't probe him deeply. It was an attempt to whitewash him. That's a disgrace.
Adrian, based on the editorial you wrote for the National Post, I take it you agree with Ezra Levant that was a whitewash of Omar Khadr, that CBC documentary.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you never want to agree too strongly with Ezra Levant, because I think he's quite on the fringe of, you know, one side of the spectrum there. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Ezra, people write him off all the time, but he's bang on in certain situations, and this is one of them. I mean, even the emotionally manipulative music there. I mean, I know you have to entertain people a little bit. It is, you know, but it's being passed off as a piece of journalism, and when you manipulate people in that way and you omit important facts, like as Ezra said, you know, produced in conjunction with Al Jazeera, I mean, that's disturbing. to me.
You know, I had a very different take on the documentary, and I had a very strong reaction to your editorial. You know, I sort of had an immediate reaction, and then I the more I thought about it, I felt like, I don't want to debate this guy. I really want to understand him, because you and I have such a different response to this documentary and to the whole case of Cotter. Maybe there's more to be learned by just kind of like exploring whether or not we're just coming at this from completely different points of view. You write, you know, the question of whether or not Omar Khadr was a child soldier. Is that a question?
I think that it is still up for debate, but if I'm being honest, yeah, he was a kid, 15 years old. We generally don't go that hard on people of that age, but, you know, it's certainly not unprecedented. I mean, his particular situation is pretty rare, if not unique, but it's not unprecedented in the terms of young people being charged with extremely serious crimes like that. You know, I can think of a local case where a boy was charged for murder at the age of 16. This is a very local, I'm talking about in my town. And he's still in prison. He's in his 40s. So people do get charged at that age. I guess I'm a little bit soft on that part. I do think he was not mature enough to be making those types of decisions. The thing is that in his interview, I mean, now he's, pushing 30. He's 28 now. In his interview, he didn't sort of make any suggestion that he was naive or that he was misled or that, you know, that kind of bothered me. You have your opportunity to say, you know, my dad, raised me this way. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I was an interpreter. I didn't really get a sense that there was a regret there, that there was sort of like I was misled or brainwashed. And that's the narrative, really, of this whole Omar Khadr thing, is I was just doing what I was told, but we didn't get that. If anything, if you look at the video evidence, I mean, it looks like he was actually having a pretty good time apprenticing in these acts of jihadi violence against people in Afghanistan.
It's just so crazy to me what you're saying. I mean, like, whether he, like, either you are a child soldier or you're not. I mean, first of all, either this designation of a child soldier either exists in your mind or it doesn't. I mean, it exists in international law.
Yeah.
So he was he was a child soldier. His father putting him in a situation where he's building explosives as a minor, putting him in a situation where he's with jihadis who are targeted by, you know, the greatest military the world has ever known, is itself a form of child abuse that he had no choice about.
Yeah.
So what he thinks about that now, whether he feels he was victimized, whether he said that and it was left on the cutting room floor, or whether he didn't say that at all, is of like total irrelevance to me. It's, you know, once you understand that this was a child mm-hmm. who was placed in one of the most dangerous situations in the world, where in fact he ultimately was mutilated. I mean, he was there when the American military came by ground and by air. He lost an eye, two mm-hmm. holes were in his chest. The soldiers, you know, were surprised he was breathing.
Right.
And before anything that the Canadian government or the American government had any complicity in, he was a victim of his father.
Okay, but here's the thing. Within the documentary itself, we're not given the impression that he was a victim of his father. We're given an impression that Ahmed Saeed Khadr was a humanitarian who just happened to work with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban to achieve his ends of making the world a better place for Afghans. I mean, that is the whitewashing to end all whitewashings, isn't it? I mean, the way that Omar Khadr talked about his dad was like, you know, he wasn't the best guy because, yeah, he dealt with Al-Qaeda, but he only did it for the people. I mean, so that's absurd. But on the other point, you know, talking about Omar as a child soldier, you know, when you talk about the context of child soldiers, you think of people in the children in the Congo or in Rwanda, or 8-year-olds who have been forced to either shoot their friends or be shot themselves, life or death choices. It doesn't seem to me like he was put in a life or death choice. He was sort of on vacation there in Afghanistan. His dad said, here, go and be an interpreter for these guys because you can speak both languages. A lack of coercion. I mean, maybe he was put in the wrong place, wrong time, but to say that, you know, to compare, it's almost an insult to a lot of the real child soldiers who suffered greatly in the wars in Africa, to compare him to that. I mean, I just find that a little bit ridiculous. And coming from North America, they were affluent. They were, you know, I mean, they weren't too wealthy, but they were well enough off that it wasn't like Omar was some street urchin, right?
It's so crazy to me what you're saying. It's so with all respect to your sympathy for the real child soldiers of the world, like you're suggesting that he had some choice in the matter and that, you know, there's like the difference in free will between a 5-year-old and a 15-year-old. I mean, if that's the plank you want to stand on, that he, you know, by virtue of him being a little bit older and that the family had money, we have to draw the line at some point and say that, you know, under a certain age, you are not responsible for these situations. You were placed in them. It wasn't your doing. And that he does fall within that category, doesn't he?
But I mean, if a 15-year-old hockey player, prodigy, you know, wants to be in the NHL and makes these decisions at 15 that he's going to do that, I mean, is he, you know, unaware of his actions or his choices in life? He's, you know, when I was 15, yeah, I did a lot of stupid things. Nobody is in full control of you know, their outcomes or their best interests when they're 15. Absolutely. But I mean, on some level, I mean, he must have real. I mean, come on, 15. You know, I hate to make such an argument like that. Like, come on. I mean, that's not a compelling way to talk about my views. But, you know, we've all been there. We weren't completely out of the loop when we were that age. I mean, he didn't understand the geopolitical situation. But I mean, at some point when you're planting IEDs or you realize you are participating in the murder of other people. I mean, he had to have understood on some level that what he was doing was wrong.
I don't even want to engage with it. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I think it's completely plausible that he had no idea. If that's your world, if that's your life, if you know your family to be humanitarians, and you know, to be fair, his father did work for an NGO. His father was involved in humanitarian efforts simultaneously with being a contemporary, Islamic fascist. I'm sure that he's a child. This was his family. I think it's completely plausible that he didn't really understand the full implications of what he was involved in. And when you get to the actual point at which he may or may not have thrown that grenade, you're talking about a time when he's basically a war zone situation where everybody around him is just being, you know, killed. And some people are very, very fixated on whether he threw once he was covered in rubble with an eyeball torn out of his face and shrapnel in his chest, did he throw a grenade or not? To me, that's almost besides the point. I guess what I'm saying is that rather than debate all these fine-grained points of the biography, I just feel like we have these definitions for a reason. He falls into them.
Right.
He was a minor. He was a child soldier. Let me try to step back here. You and I saw this documentary so differently because it seemed like the questions you were asking of this documentary were questions of Omar Khadr and his family. You know, you wanted to know, what did your father tell you? Did you believe in Islamic Jihad? I'm quoting from your piece here. What did you think about radical Islam? Like this documentary was an occasion for him to sort of be interrogated to prove that he has no longer got those kinds of sympathies and that we need to know that he's going to be rehabilitated. And to me, the occasion of his release is an occasion for us to ask ourselves, what the hell did we do to this kid? And how were we complicit? I mean, you write about his alleged torture. We hear his torturer admitting to torturing him in the film. I mean, isn't the real question now, what did we do? And how did we allow ourselves to treat this Canadian child this way?
You know, we're looking at this from 2015 hindsight. You also have to look at the context under which and the timeline in which he was captured by the Americans, brought to Bagram and tortured and interrogated, and then brought to Guantanamo Bay. And that was back when the Chrétien Martin government was still in power, you know, up until 2006. So there wasn't really a loud Canadian appetite to care about this kid. We were still gung-ho on the American war on terror. We're going to go into Iraq and we're going to find the weapons of mass destruction. And this is something that everybody believed. And you know, did people have any sympathy for the kid back then? No, they were like, let him burn. They should never save his life. I mean, maybe we don't think that now, but it's just because we have the benefit of a different perspective now. The war in Iraq was a failure. We created more jihadis than we destroyed. Yeah, I mean, it's useful to look at it also from a historical perspective. I mean, the liberals had, 4 years to do something. They did nothing. But you know, it feels like the Harper government, and, you know, I don't want to defend them, but they're taking almost 100% of the brunt for this.
Yeah, I think you're right about the Chrétien getting off the hook a little bit when he promised that Omar Khadr would not be treated any differently than any other Canadian citizen who's accused of a crime abroad. That's what he said. And of course, the history of what happened with Omar Khadr's father, you know, being released because of Canadian government intervention and then finding himself rejoining jihadis and dying in a gunfight. Certainly, who this guy was and who his family was and who his family was associating with is why he suffered the way he did and is why we abandoned him the way that we did and why he was the last Western citizen in Guantanamo Bay, the only Western citizen who wasn't extradited from Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
But we do have that hindsight now. We can look back on it, and now is the time for us to look at everything. And I saw this documentary as the occasion where we're first looking at, like, you know what? The government has done everything they can to stop us from hearing from him. He has been vilified. We have pictures of him that don't look like the way he looks now. And let's look at him, look at his face, listen to his humanity. And yeah, I don't feel it was emotionally manipulative. I feel like it was emotional. It is emotional to see a grown man maintain his dignity and his humanity after what he's been through. So, you know, I'll agree with one thing with Ezra Levant and with you. I think the CBC should have been more forthcoming about the Al Jazeera connection and not buried that in the end credits. But you know, other than that, I think we still have yet to have the real conversation about this.
Yeah, and let's hope other journalists are granted interviews. I mean, you know, the documentary was extremely favorable, and, you know, he's not a free man forever. There's still things to wrap up here. But, yeah, I would like to hear just a little bit tougher questions. I mean, I'm just talking here, not even as a pundit, but as a journalist myself. You know, I haven't done giant stories like this, but you know, you want to get a number of sides, and if there were no sides that thought that, you know, Omar had done anything wrong, then fair enough. But I don't know if they explored all of those opportunities to find a source who might say, you know, the kids could still be dangerous, or the kid is fine. I don't.
Come on, is that the question? I look, man, I'm with you. We need more tough questions about this story, but not to Omar Khadr. That's not who I have those questions for. That's been your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you liked it. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all. I respond when I can. And I am on Twitter at Jesse Brown. Adrian, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Adrian McNair.
Canada Land's website is at canadalandshow.com. The crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. The next episode will be up on Monday. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. I make this show with Katie Jensen. If you like this show, support it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Are you ready for truly hydrated skin? Meet Hyaluronic Body Serum, a breakthrough in body care from Osea. It's clinically proven to instantly increase hydration by 161%. Their lightweight, fast-absorbing serum delivers 24 hours of nonstop hydration for silky, smooth skin without the sticky afterfeel. Osea's latest innovation combines the magic of their best-selling Hyaluronic C Serum with a new formula that's good for the whole body, and 5 types of hyaluronic acid to target every layer of the skin. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been crafting seaweed-powered products for nearly 30 years. The best part? Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code SUMMER.